New to the living healthy lifestyle or a healthy living veteran, this is your place for honest answers.
Naturally Savvy.
With registered holistic nutritionist, Andrea Donsky.
And health journalist,
Lisa Davis.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to Naturally Savvy. Andrea is away today. Have you heard of the keto diet? If not, you might be living under a rock. The keto diet is a big deal these days, and I am thrilled to have Chef Gerard Vivorvito on the program to talk about this. Let's jump into this. First of all, I want to say that you are a culinary instructor as a director of culinary education for Passion Fish, a NGO nonprofit organization. Talk to us about this, and then we'll jump into the keto diet.
Oh, sure. In the year 2000, I was cooking in San Diego, and a bunch of chef friends and I were all looking at each other one day and all questioning, like, wait a second, is your fish getting more expensive? Mine is. Are your fish getting smaller? Mine, I've never seen anything. What's going on? And this is, you know, you got to realize 18 years ago, now we take sustainability for granted, but it was a wake-up call. And really, the internet wasn't what it is today, and we couldn't just Google stuff like you can today. And it was kind of a grassroots effort where a bunch of us got together and started, you know, tracking down the purveyors, and then from the purveyors working back to the fishermen. And it's like a grassroots effort to find out what's going on, why are these fish smaller, and looking up, you know, congressional records and who's voting on what. What standards are being done, only to find out this horrifying fact, 91% of the seafood in this country that we consume is imported. And when I teach this to people, they're like, you're kidding. I'm like, no, look at the West Coast, the East Coast, look at the Gulf Coast. We're surrounded by water, yet we consistently pull in fish from outside for any number of reasons, usually costs. I mean, you out by Cape Cod, you have all the greatest fish in the world off the George's Bank, yet we still pull in fish from all over the world, and then we're pulling in from countries that may not have the regulations we have, so fish are getting smaller, overfished, or completely decimated. So we started this, outreach group to be educators. We tried to stay away from advocacy because we didn't want to shut people down right off the bat and just say, hey, look, we don't care what you want to eat, but why don't you ask, where is it from? How was it caught? Is it environmentally friendly? Are there going to be fish left for your children, your grandchildren, future generations, et cetera, et cetera? And we started all these great dialogues, and we've spoken at the International Seafood Summit all around the world. We've hosted our own Socratic little forums and dinners, and we try to make it fun and educational because food, you know, everyone on this planet, we all share one thing in common. We all eat. We have to eat to survive. And if we're going to eat, what do we put in our bodies? And that's what, you know, as a lifelong chef has brought me down so many roads to say, okay, well, it's not even seafood anymore. I mean, now it's produce, it's oils, it's fats, it's sources of fiber, it's going to the farmer's market. You know, everyone brags about how they went to the farmer's market and they picked up 17 different types of tomatoes. But the average American eats the same three fish every year. Shrimp is number one, canned is number two, salmon's number three, and if you want to throw a number four, it's pollock, which is the filet of fish at McDonald's. We have zero variety when it comes to our proteins and our diet. So it's like we've got to start branching out, changing our diets, having healthier lifestyles, educating ourselves. You know, let's put the internet to good use. Let's start researching, you know, what we're putting in our bodies.
Yeah, I really admire what you're doing. And I mentioned today we're going to be talking about the keto diet. Now, I know that for you, you tried a lot of different things out, paleo, low-fat, high-fat, South Beach, et cetera. Talk to us about when you adopted the keto diet and what brought you to it.
What really brought me to it is my wife and I love to travel and we love to eat. And we love to experiment with different cuisines and cook together and eat together. And I've tried every diet under. Not necessarily just because I always felt that maybe I needed to lose weight, but I had catering clients and people I was educating, and if I was going to get into their heads, I needed to practice with myself. And I was looking at all these photos from our last eating excursion to Paris, and I'm like, who the hell is that in those pictures next to my wife? I'm like, good God.
Oh, no. Oh,
I ballooned up. So I started thinking, you know, the last time I got this big, I had Lyme disease, which is popular in the Northeast, and I was retaining all this water. So, of course, I'm like, I have to tick bite. And sure enough, I go and have my blood test. tested, and my doctor's like, well, if you don't change your habits, you are right on that borderline of pre-diabetic. And I mean, there is nothing worse. That's the greatest curse for, you know, people in general, but
oh,
for
yeah.
a chef to be told you can't eat. I mean, that's like, come on. It's like telling someone you can't breathe anymore. Sugar used to be my absolute favorite food group. So I started researching more and more, and years and years ago, I used to play around with the Atkins diet, which people think is the same, but it's not, because that's usually more protein heavy. So keto really is, even if I can explain it, is the body basically has two fuels it can use for power. You can use fat or you can use carbohydrate. And the trick is to use as much fat as you can and hopefully leave your sugar for emergencies. Sadly, in real life, it never works out that way, because your body can only store a maximum of, you know, between our size, your size, whoever's size, 1,800 to 2,000 calories worth of carbohydrates. All right, but we all can store an infinite. This is everyone listening, everyone on the planet. We can all store an infinite amount of calories as fat. Most people are sugar burners. And if you think of like a machine, sugar is a super inefficient fuel to burn, yet we're better at it. So now we've got this, it's like having a fortune in the bank without an ATM card. We've got all this fat to burn. So, you know, the joke is you really want to be a better butter burner. Now try to say that 10 times fast.
So better burner.
You know, you really want to be good at accessing and using what your fat calories. And when you stop eating sugar completely, eventually you're going to use up those 2,000 calories, right? So
yeah.
Now you have no glucose left in your body. And it's like switching to that reserve tank of fuel sources. So you start to burn fat for fuel, right? This is called nutritional ketosis, which, you know, some people hear that word and all of a sudden, like, ooh, that's bad. No, that's not bad. What they're thinking about is diabetic ketoacidosis, which is bad. So ketosis is basically your body metabolizing fat, and out of the fat it produces what are called ketones, and they're a great source of energy for your heart, brain, your muscles, and you can just burn and burn. So now I'm doing half marathons, triathlons, and I'm proving to people, I'm like, look, this is all I'm eating. And I've since January 1st is when I realized, like, you know, everyone wants a New Year's resolution, but, you know, luckily here we go, almost on June, you know, coming into June, I'm still going strong, and I'm down 30 pounds. I'm, you know, the lightest I've ever been, or the lowest body fat percentage. I'm still gaining muscle mass. So people are like, oh, you're going to burn up. You're going to eat your own body for fuel. I'm like, no, this is everyone wants to vilify whatever you do, whether they're just like, well, it didn't work for me, so I'm going to tell you you're wrong. And, you know, you have the science. And, what I try to teach people is, just like the fish you put into your body, you got to be discriminating about the fats you eat, right? Like, truly, and it's crazy when you're in a keto mindset, your body doesn't care if you're eating corn oil or deep fat fryer oil that's been refried 25 times over. It's still going to raise your ketone level. But we have to avoid those junky, unhealthy fats, because we're just going to wreck our health other ways. You know, and most people these days have heard of inflammation, like you said. If you haven't heard of that, you're definitely under a rock. So we want to use healthy oils. And, you know, if I'm doing a cold preparation, I'm going to definitely go for olive oil. You know, being raised in an Italian family, olive oil, especially extra virgin, it's like mother's milk to me. It flows through my veins. The downside is I love to cook a lot, so I save my olive oil for cold finishing or for salad dressings. I like coconut oil, which I can heat up to about 350 degrees. I think it's got a great flavor. And then when I'm really going to cook and I'm really going to do some high heat searing, grilling, or great marinated, I use this Malaysian palm oil, and it's pretty cool. It's cholesterol and flavor neutral. It'll stand up to my high heat. You know, as my wife says, before you start cooking, unplug all the smoke detectors, because I love to sear everything, and even indoor grilling in our complex. And hope the hood fan pulls it out. And it's got this really beautiful orange tinting from the vitamin A and the E and all these tocotrienols, which are good for your heart, brain, and liver. And, you know, as I find myself doing all this training, I like knowing that the oils I put in my body are also supporting you know, whether it's immune system or my brain or my heart, I'm really out there pushing myself. So I can't just put some junky oil into my body. You know, there are all types of good. I love butter also. You know, if you can find yourself a nice grass-fed butter, which it's kind of hard in certain parts of the country, but it's got the, you know, the extra omegas that you're looking for. You also have your special occasion oils, like an avocado oil, which you can really turn up the heat on, macadamia nut oil. There, you know, some people are like, what is that? It's just a beauty aid. I'm like, no, it's sweet and buttery. So I find all these good oils, and then it was crazy because it all came back to me. I went out to Asia, Southeast Asia in particular, and I'm in Malaysia and I'm touring around. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool because I'm looking for fish, I'm looking for shrimp ponds, and I'm looking for how they treat their tuna out there and all the markets. And I come across actually the palm oil plantations, which are unbelievable because Malaysia has decided to dedicate 50% of their country's land to sustainable use. And then when I started digging around with my NGO, we found out that the United States will only dedicate 4% of its land, which is like, wait a second, we are this massive country, we can afford a little bit more than 4%, right? So, and then digging even deeper, we're finding out, you know, I'm talking to the people, it takes 10 times more land to produce the same amount of canola oil or soybean oil than it does for palm oil, which people love to use. And these trees are growing for 30 years. Harvested every 3 months, no chemical processing. So it's not labor intensive. They literally chop off this fruit, bring it to a processing plant. They burn off all the husks, so there's all these steam generators. And it reminds me of when I be in the hills of Tuscany watching olive oil be crushed between two stones. I'm like, you know, we always love to say in the name of progress, but sometimes these ancient stone age techniques of just, you know, take something and press it. Get the oil. There's no chemical refinement. It's just, I wish people would eat more like this. And I mean, if I could go on, I think some people are finding, I don't know, ways to call me like, you're a caveman. All you do is eat meat. All you do is eat meat. I'm like, that's not all I eat. Yes, I have the luxury of eating a really nice fatty ribeye or piece of prime rib. And I wake up tomorrow and I lost, you know, half a pound, and people are like, what are you doing? There's no way you're just doing this. I'm like, it's true. I mean, your body just burns it. And I found in the beginning, there's this, everyone's like, oh, you're going to feel terrible. You're going to feel terrible. I'm like, why am I going to feel terrible? Like, wait till you get this keto flu.
Ah, yes, like, the keto flu.
Oh, good God.
That's what I've heard about.
I don't like getting a normal flu. What's the keto flu? So it's going to take a few, if anyone's interested in actually pursuing this, I am not going to lie to you. It's like it's always darkest before the dawn. There's going to be about 10 days, this interim period, where your body's like, no, I will not give up sugar. I don't care if you chew your fingernails, if you smoke cigarettes, if you drink too much alcohol, whatever you do, when you stop, your body will do anything. Just clawing its way back to like convince you psychosomatically or whatever, like you need sugar. Like I walk by the ice cream, I'm hallucinating, talking to me like, grab me, take me, look how good I am. And you just feel run down and miserable and cranky. And then, you know, about, they say 10 days. I would say it was a good rock solid 2 weeks for me that I came back with more energy than I knew what to do with. And I started getting worried. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm running on less sleep than ever. I'm exercising harder and longer than I've ever gone in my lifetime. I mean, I shouldn't have this much energy. But the more I research it, it's how our ancestors lived. I mean, they weren't planting rows of grain and eating oatmeal for breakfast. They would hunt down an animal. They would kill it. They would eat. Who knew when they would eat again or when they would plant again? But they're in the wintertime. So it's proven you could survive like this. So you get adapted to it. Then it's called being fat adapted. And there's this whole movement of marathon runners and ultra marathon runners. But the one thing that I think we all have to look out for is making sure you're not just eating, you know, oh, I'm going to have a hamburger and I'm going to top it with bacon and then avocado and everything else, which is all fat. But even some of those foods, we're going to lose some some fiber. And that would, I say, be the biggest drawback on the diet.
Yeah. So what do you do? Like, are you eating vegetables, hopefully?
Well, I do. My wife will tell me I need to eat more, but I do eat a ton. But if I don't, I find myself supplementing with high quality fibers because, you know, we're all, many of us are about 35 to 45% shy of how much fiber we should be eating. Like the average between male and female, depending on your body size, 25 to 35 grams of fiber. And if you were to line that up, or if anyone does a Google image search of what 35 grams of fiber looks like, they would be horrified. Like, I don't eat that much food in a day. But what people don't realize is we just fill ourselves up on empty, stupid calories for the majority of the time. And then we'll always find ourselves being hungry, right? Our blood sugar spikes because of all the sugar, and then it drops, and we crash. We're like, ooh, I'm hungry again. Whereas if you ate some more bulkier foods, you know, whether they're berries or avocados or grapes or beans, I still find, even though I think I get enough, when I make my little fat smoothies in the morning to take to work with me, I'll use a product like Sun Fiber and a scoop of that or two scoops in my shake. It's tasteless. It's odorless. It literally dissolves and you don't even notice anything. You can cook with it. Doesn't change any textural issues. And it shouldn't be confused. I know there's probably some listeners out there like, oh my God, my grandmother used to use fiber and that stuff is awful. It's horrible. This is not the, you know.
Not your grandmother's fiber?
Yeah. That should be a great tagline for a company. Like, not your father's oatmeal meal and not your grandmother's fiber. It's not the orange scented one that goes down like
salt. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Doubles you over in pain. This is like no bloating, no bad taste. So you really want something soluble. I mean, we do need insoluble and soluble, but the like Sun Fiber has prebiotics in it, which we all need. You've heard so much about gut bacteria and how our guts really are our second brain in our body, how important it is to really, really take care of ourselves.
Oh, whether definitely.
Mentally or gut, everything starts in the gut.
Take us through your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then if you can share some keto recipes with us, and they don't have to be like a scoop of this or scoop of that, but even just some basic stuff. I know you have some recipes on your website, but take us through your day. What are we eating here?
All right. My day, I wake up at 5 o'clock a.m. because I'm just too wound for sound. I'm going to have some coffee, and depending on the day, it might be a little bit of heavy cream, tablespoon or two of heavy cream in there, or I really love MCT oil, like a medium chain triglyceride. You might see what says MCT. Some people call it by the brand name, like Bulletproof Coffee, if anyone's ever heard of that.
Yes.
Put that
Dave Asprey's great.
And it's as creamy as the most decadent cappuccino. And I drink that, and then I'll wait probably until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'll have a shake with some chia seeds, some flax seeds, some coconut milk, maybe a tablespoon of almond butter in there for a little bit of protein and a little bit of the extra flavor. I love to put some cinnamon and some cocoa powder in there. That, depending on the day, could actually tide me over till about 5, but being the chef and always in the kitchen, then I'm going to go for, I love a good piece of fish. I mean, I'm a major carnivore, there's no doubt about it, but being that fish is my specialty, maybe a sauteed piece of salmon or a grilled piece of salmon, maybe some swordfish. I like the higher activity, higher oiling fish, grilled sardines.
Wait, I have to take you back for a second. Did you say you wake up at 5 a.m., you have the coffee with the MCT oil, and then you have that smoothie you talked about, and that satiates you till 5 p.m., just those two things?
Yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's incredible.
I mean, there's also this diet or lifestyle, I should call it, gives you so much energy, and it's so there's such a sense of satiety with fat, which you never really get from carbohydrates because there's no spiking of your bloodstream, right? There's no insulin spike. So what a lot of people actually find is they couple it up with intermittent fasting where they you know, don't eat for 18 hours of the day and combine all their food into a 6-hour period. So, yeah, I mean, you can play around with that. And then I find if I'm not working out for a day that I may just do the intermittent fasting. But lately I'm training for this triathlon in San Diego for the end of September. So I'm doing lots of miles every day on the bike and in the pool and running. So I'm trying to keep my energy up. I don't want to waste away. I like the size I'm at now. I'm really happy with my body fat percentage and my muscle mass and everything else. So to maintain where I am, I'm probably consuming, I don't know, upwards of 2,500 to 3,000 calories a day, which seem people like, wait a second, how do you not gain weight with that? But it's all what type of fuel are you using? And if you're being efficient at burning it, your body's so happy. And bring it on. I'm happy to burn this for you. I'm happy to use it. So then maybe when I come home, my wife and I will make a salad. And, you know, like I said, either an olive oil-based dressing or macadamia nut-based dressing, or even make Caesar salad, and then we'll do some type of protein on there and maybe some steamed vegetables. Right now on my stove, I've got it's an Indian dish called butter masala, and it's just chicken legs and thighs, which are they're free range. So they got some really great marbling of fat in the legs and thighs. And then there's chili pepper in there and tomato and a can of coconut milk. And there's a sweet potato diced up in there, some onions. A little later, right before dinner, I'm going to throw in some cauliflower for some extra fiber and some texture. And, you know, I don't feel like I'm missing on anything.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
There are days that I'm like, ooh, gosh, I could really, really kill an ice cream sundae right now. But, I mean, we've developed so many recipes, like low-carb brownies, and cream cheese-based cookies. Pizza was one of my favorites, so we make pizza crust, mozzarella and almond flour, a little bit of cream cheese and egg, bake that off, let it get stiff like bread, and then top it with tomato sauce and cheese. You know, French fries we've replaced with jicama. Slice off jicama and then turn it into like a French fry shape. Cook it in a little boiling water for a little while. Toss it in some palm oil, and then put that on a sheet pan and bake them off so they're crunchy like French fries. You know, there's no shortage. Basically, look at the recipe and say to yourself, what in here is gratuitous? Do I really need a sauce that's thickened with flour? Or can I just let it reduce a little bit more? Or do I need that breading? What is it really going to provide for me? You know, people are like, well, I love fried chicken. Well, what do you like about it? Is it the crunch? If it's the crunch, you could just get the skin and, you know, toss in a little oil, either, you know, Malaysian palm, whatever it is, put it in a pan, sear it off till the skin gets crispy, and then finish it off in the oven. People just, I think we've been so rushed.
Yeah, I agree.
And we don't even look anymore. We just want to give me the store-bought, it's already breaded, it's already this. How about coating it with a little, you know, brush a little mustard on there, and then a little nut crust on it, which gives you the crunch, it gives you those really nice, healthy fats, it gives you some color. Just get back in the kitchen and play. I mean, we've become, if people spend half the time in the kitchen devoting themselves to taking care of their bodies that they spend trolling around on the internet between whatever sites they're on, social media or anything else, they'd be shocked at how much they could get done. Yeah, I mean, a piece of fish takes 4 minutes to cook. When someone says, I don't have time to cook, I'm like, are you kidding me? It takes my computer longer to go from off to, you know, home page than it does for me to saute off a little piece of trout. Throw some veggies in the same pan. One pan meal. You know, it's what we strive for in this house. You can make an omelet in no time at all.
Oh,
you can
definitely.
Have protein in there and vegetables and healthy cage-free eggs or whatever your choice is. Finish it off with some cheese. I mean, it's so easy.
What vegetables do you use?
This time of year, I'm really so thrilled because all the new spring asparagus that's popping up everywhere, and spring morel mushrooms, fiddlehead ferns. I love greens, kales, all types of kales, baby greens, arugula. What I like about buying, even if I go to the grocery store, I'm not going to lie and say I go to the farmer's market every weekend, but when I can go, I can go. But, you know, you can buy those clamshells of organic greens, and they can either go in a salad, they can go into a saute pan with a little, oil and a little crushed garlic, and you have some wilted greens. They can be a topping on a burger. They're so versatile. Fold them into an omelet. This time of year, so mushrooms, asparagus, ferns. My big thing. I mean, I'm more excited than anyone on the planet for another 2 months from now. I don't want to rush the calendar. I know we're already halfway through the year, but
it's crazy.
I need my tomatoes.
Love tomatoes.
Go to the farmer's market in the Hudson Valley. Good God, I think they grow like 30 different types of tomatoes. Well, you pick a color, they have it. Pick a shape, they have it. And then the hotter season vegetables, the peppers and the eggplants. Just, I still love to eat Mediterranean style. It's my heritage, and I'll never stop. But, that's it. I do, when I feel the need to replace, my mother's pasta casseroles, whether it was lasagna or baked ziti or whatever, I'll cook off a spaghetti squash, split it in half, boil it, put it in the oven, roast it till I can scrape out, all the pulp, and then layer that with marinara sauce and some mozzarella and ricotta cheese, and I just call them like that's my lasagna now.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of things you can do.
Okay, it's just people. We just like I said, we eat the same three fish every day around the country. We eat the same vegetables. I mean, even if you go into a generic restaurant in anywhere USA, it doesn't matter the time of year. It's going to be probably some lousy lettuce, cucumbers, tomatoes, and red onions, and that's their house salad. I'm like, oh, come on, really? It's winter time. You have hard squashes and curry squashes and butternut squash and spaghetti squash, or it's summertime. Can't you do, different types of tomatoes or melon? Best up some watermelon, toss it in the salad. I always loved like watermelon, cucumbers, mint, and olives, and feta. I always thought those flavors always went well together.
That sounds delicious. All right, so tell us all the ways that we can find you.
The easiest way, if people want to contact me or they have more questions or are looking for recipes, because I love to share them. When someone says chef secret, I'm like, shut up. I don't want to hear from you. There are no secrets. We didn't invent food. Let's take care of each other, is at chef. chefgerard.com. And I've got some recipes up there, and I've got some links to my email, and you can just click on the link to my email and shoot your questions away. If you're more interested in learning about my nonprofit, there's passionfish.org, passionfish.org, all one word. And those are the two number one ways. I try to avoid too much of the social media because it just sucks me right into the the rabbit hole. So
it is tough.
Contact me that way. I love to answer questions. I love to send recipes to people. If people have a specific recipe and they say, well, how would you eliminate your carbs from this? Give me a challenge. I'm going to put that out to all the listeners out there. Play Stump the Chef. Tell me what you got.
It's time for Stump the Chef.
I can't say the only prize that you're going to get is a more nutritional meal.
But that's fantastic. Enough. Isn't that what we all want? Chef Gerard, you're just so delightful. This has been so much fun. I want to thank everyone for listening to Naturally Savvy Radio. In the meantime, you can check us out at naturallysavvy.com. At Naturally Savvy, at Andrea Donsky, at Health Media Gal 1, and at Your Radio MD. Thanks for listening and stay well.